Vekatra podcast conversations for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vekatra AI. Welcome. Today we're diving deep into, well, a foundational American story captured in the journals of Lewis and Clark. Think of it as the original epic road trip narrative, but way more intense. It's all about survival, science, and sovereignty.
It really is monumental stuff. We're talking about the core of Discovery's journey, which was just grueling. 2 years, 1804 to 1806, covering, what, 8,000 miles?
Yeah, an incredible distance.
And this whole thing was kicked off by President Thomas Jefferson right after the Louisiana Purchase. The stakes for the U.S., this, you know, young republic, were incredibly high.
Exactly. Jefferson wasn't just, like, sending them off sightseeing. He needed real answers. Was there a Northwest Passage, that water route to the Pacific?
Big question, yeah.
And what was actually out there? Resources, dangers, people who lived in this huge new territory.
Precisely. It was framed as a military venture, but underneath it was an intellectual mission. And, you know, the journals make it really clear. They didn't find some empty wilderness.
Right.
They walked into this incredibly complex ecosystem filled with sophisticated native societies. What they documented shaped America's idea of its own destiny, but it was much more complicated than anyone back in Washington probably pictured.
That mix of discovery and, well, dominance is key, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's why these journals are still so vital to understand.
Okay, so let's talk about who actually wrote all this down. The authors, Meriwether Lewis and William Clark, they weren't academics sitting in dusty rooms. These were guys out there doing it. Their authority comes straight from that brutal lived experience.
Yeah, that's a crucial distinction. You had Meriwether Lewis, the sort of intellectual leader, the science guy. He'd been Jefferson's personal secretary. And Jefferson himself actually tutored him in botany, zoology, navigation, all that stuff. So Lewis is the one bringing that sort of philosophical observation, the real scientific rigor you see in the writing.
Okay. And then there's William Clark.
Clark. He's the boots-on-the-ground frontiersman. Whoa. Experienced military officer, co-commander with Lewis. He was the map maker, the negotiator, the logistics guy. Always focused on the practicalities, you know, the river currents, getting through the day.
And famously known for his spelling, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's just say uniquely creative is the kind term. But his skills in other areas were indispensable.
So you've got this partnership.
Exactly. And it's this amazing synergy. Lewis brings the Enlightenment curiosity, the systematic approach. Clark brings the hard-won frontier know-how. And they shared command, completely equal, which for a military expedition back then was pretty radical.
So the journals themselves, it's not just one book. It's this huge collection, right? Daily logs, scientific notes, records of meetings with tribes, personal thoughts. Basically, their massive report back to the government.
And they were juggling Jefferson's four main goals, which were just enormous. First, find that water route, the Northwest Passage.
Still a dream.
Second, establish diplomacy and trade with Native American tribes. Sort of bring them into the American sphere, you know, establish relationships.
And third, the science part, just relentless documentation.
Oh, yeah. Cataloging, what was it, over 200 plants, 122 animal species that were new to American science at the time.
Like the grizzly bear.
Exactly. The grizzly, the prairie dog. Lewis's detailed descriptions of landscapes, climate, it literally changed how science back east understood the continent.
And that connects to the fourth objective, doesn't it? Asserting American sovereignty.
Directly. They're mapping, naming, describing. It's all part of claiming this vast territory. So this 8,000-mile journey, it's part scientific ledger, part ethnographic study, and part, you know, just raw human drama.
Okay, let's walk through that drama. Starting with phase one, heading up the Missouri River in 1804. Sounds like sheer hard work initially.
Oh, it was brutal. Just imagine hauling this heavy keelboat plus smaller canoes against the Missouri's current, day after day. Discipline was everything, but diplomacy was just as critical right from the start.
You mentioned the Teton Sioux.
Yeah, that was their first really dangerous encounter. Things got incredibly tense, almost violent. It was Clark's firm but patient diplomacy that managed to de-escalate it. It really showed them how fragile their passage could be.
So that sets a tone. Then they get to the winter of 1804, Fort Mandan. A pause, right?
More about learning.
A vital pause. They spent months living near the Mandan and Hidatsa peoples. This let them take incredibly detailed notes on their farming, their social structures, trade networks, really deep ethnographic work.
And this is where Sacagawea comes in.
Exactly. They hired Sacagawea, Shoshone woman. Her knowledge of the lands ahead was crucial, obviously. But maybe even more important was her presence, along with her baby son, Jean-Baptiste.
Why the baby? Well, a war party wouldn't travel with a woman and child. Her presence signaled peaceful intentions to every tribe they encountered. She was, in effect, a diplomat, a cultural bridge, just by being there.
Fascinating. Okay, so spring 1805, they leave Fort Mandan. Now they're really heading into the unknown.
Totally unknown territory. And you see it in Lewis's writing, the sense of wonder, but also the danger ramps up. They start encountering animals that were basically legends back east.
Like the grizzly bear again?
Yes. His notes on the grizzly are, frankly, terrifying. He describes it as a much more furious and formidable animal than anything they knew. This wasn't like a black bear.
Yeah.
It forced them to change tactics, realizing how vulnerable they actually were.
And then they hit a major snag. The Great Falls of the Missouri. Sounds dramatic.
It was a massive obstacle. Not just one waterfall, but a series of five huge ones. They had to portage, carry everything overland.
How long did that take?
They thought maybe a few days. It took them a month. A whole month.
Oh, well.
Hauling thousands of pounds of gear. Something like 18 miles across the prairie. The journals are just full of the misery. Crude wagons breaking, swarms of gnats, hailstorms, rattlesnakes, prickly pear cactus, everywhere. It pushed them to their absolute limit, tested their planning, their leadership, everything.
But that wasn't even the worst part, was it? The crossing of the Bitterroot Mountains.
That sounds
like the real low point.
Absolutely the nadir. They got caught by an early winter snowstorm in the mountains. The journals talk about near starvation, just desperation.
What did they eat?
They were down to eating their own horses. Lewis even writes about boiling tallow candles to get some fat, some calories. Their survival at that point came down entirely to Native American help.
Who helped them?
The Nez Perce tribe on the other side. They essentially rescued the expedition, providing food and shelter when they stumbled out in the mountains, basically half dead.
Incredible. And after all that suffering, they finally reached the Pacific coast in November 1805. Clark's famous line.
Ocean in view. Oh, the joy. Yeah. You can just feel the raw emotion, the relief, the triumph after almost 2 years of relentless hardship. It's such a human moment.
But the joy didn't last forever, right? They had to spend another winter out there at Fort Clatsop.
Right, near the mouth of the Columbia River.
Yeah.
And that winter was grim. The journals describe constant rain, dampness, lots of illness, pretty poor food. But even then, Lewis kept up the scientific work, meticulously documenting the coastal plants, animals, and the local Chinook and Clatsop people.
And something pretty remarkable happened that winter involving the vote for the campsite location.
Yes, that's extraordinary. When they were deciding exactly where to build Fort Clatsop for the winter, they held a vote. And significantly, both York, who was Clark's enslaved man, and Sakeawea participated in that vote.
A black man and a woman voting on a military decision in 1805.
Exactly. Now, we have to be clear, York remained enslaved after the expedition returned. But in that moment, on the edge of the continent, the extreme circumstances kind of forced this recognition that every single person's input mattered for survival. It was incredibly progressive for its time, even if temporary.
So finally, the return journey, they didn't just retrace their steps, did they?
No, and this shows how much they'd learned, their adaptive mastery. On the way back, they made a strategic decision to split up.
What?
To cover more ground. Lewis took a group to explore the Marias River region further north, while Clark took another group down the Yellowstone River. It maximized the mapping and scientific data they could gather before heading home.
Smart.
Very smart. It allowed them to fill in more blanks on the map, solidifying their findings. And then finally, they arrived back in St. Louis in September 1806. People back east had basically given them up for dead. Their return was a national event.
What an epic story. Okay, looking back at the whole journey, those thousands of miles, what are the big takeaways, the themes that still matter today? I mean, number one has to be just sheer perseverance, right? But it wasn't like Hollywood heroism.
No, not at all. It was the daily grind, the discipline. It wasn't one big heroic battle. It was the day in, day out commitment to the task, dealing with constant setbacks like that month-long portage. Just keep going.
Which leads to the second theme, maybe, that collaborative leadership between Lewis and Clark.
Absolutely. Their partnership is really a textbook example of synergy. You had Lewis, the planner, the scientist, the visionary,
mm-hmm.
and Clark, the practical manager, the people person, the guy who could handle the immediate crisis, and crucially, no ego. They genuinely shared command, consulted each other. That's why you get these two distinct but complementary voices in the journals.
Okay, and theme three. This is the tricky one, right? The relationship with Native Americans. That tension between relying on them and, well, taking over.
It's deeply complex. Their survival absolutely depended on Native knowledge and hospitality. Think of Sacagawea's guidance, the Mandan's support, the Nez Perce rescue. We couldn't have done it without them.
What?
But at the same time, their core mission was to assert American dominance. They were handing out peace medals and flags, making speeches about the Great Father in Washington, claiming the land for the United States. Even the act of scientific classification, Lewis naming plants and animals, was a form of claiming ownership. It's manifest destiny being born right there in the journals. You can't ignore that tension.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable but crucial. And the last theme, the science itself.
Right. Despite everything, the danger, the diplomacy, the sheer physical effort, the journals are fundamentally a scientific record. Driven by enlightened ideals of empirical observation, mapping, classifying species, correcting geographical myths, fulfilling Jefferson's intellectual mandate.
The quotes scattered throughout really capture this mix, don't they?
They absolutely do. You get these moments of profound insight right alongside raw, immediate reactions.
Like Clark's ocean in view, oh the joy. It's just pure, unfiltered relief and accomplishment after so much struggle.
Exactly. And then you have Lewis offering the more philosophical counterpoint, reflecting on the difficulties. The road to glory is stony, dark, and crooked. It acknowledges that great things require enduring hardship, that the path isn't easy. It speaks to that psychological resilience.
And then there's Lewis the scientist, describing the grizzly bear. The grizzly bear is a much more furious and formidable animal. It's not emotional, it's objective classification. He's analyzing a new danger with that Enlightenment empirical eye. That's how they approach the entire unknown West.
Yeah, and then there are those moments acknowledging their dependence, like Clark's simple, practical note about Sacagawea's guidance. The Indian woman who has been of great service to me as a pilot recommends a gap in the mountain, which I shall cross. It's not flowery, it's just a statement of fact. We need this local expertise to succeed. Her knowledge was essential.
It's amazing how these lessons from, you know, over 200 years ago on the frontier can actually apply to modern life, like in business or managing projects.
It really is surprising. Tip one could be, plan meticulously, but be ready to adapt instantly.
Mm.
Lewis and Clark had a plan based on what they thought the West was like.
Right.
But their actual success came from being incredibly flexible, pivoting when they hit unexpected obstacles like the Great Falls taking a month instead of days. Need the solid plan, but you also need that agility.
Okay, that makes sense. Tip two, cross-cultural competence. The way they approach tribes, the formal contact, the gift-giving, trying to understand the protocols, it's a lesson in itself.
Definitely. Whether it's international business or just working with diverse teams, taking the time to genuinely understand different perspectives and priorities like they had to do with the Mandan to survive that winter is crucial. Don't just assume your way is the only way.
And tip three, the journals themselves.
Exactly. The power of documentation. Lewis and Clark rigorously recorded everything, what worked, what failed, what they learned, every single day. That kind of systematic knowledge management is vital for any big project or organization to learn and grow over the long term. Pass that knowledge on.
So pulling it all together, maybe the biggest lesson is that this kind of major undertaking, whether it's exploring a continent or building a company, needs both things. That careful preparation and the ability to roll with the punches, to adapt.
Precisely. And it also shows that achievement rarely happens in isolation. It wasn't just Lewis and Clark's individual brilliance or toughness. It relied on their whole team, their systems, and critically, on the cooperation and knowledge shared by the Native American peoples they met. You need that network of support.
And that brings us back to the complex legacy, doesn't it? The journals document this amazing feat of discovery, but they also mark the start of huge changes, cultural, environmental, for the West. The knowledge they gathered was used for science, yes, but also directly for territorial expansion.
It forces us to think about the responsibility that comes with knowledge, doesn't it? How is information used? What are the consequences, intended or unintended? That's the duality we were talking about earlier, and it's something we're still grappling with today, makes you think.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.